Welcome, everybody, to the inaugural episode of The Edge, the podcast where we're going to talk to you about strategies for developing and sustaining high-performing teams. I'm Jenny Miller. I'm here with my colleague, Alison Gree.
Hi.
Welcome, Alison. Just a little bit about us before we start. So we lead a global consultancy which specialises in high-performing teams and leadership development called Management Dynamics. We've both been working with and studying teams for decades. We won't say how many decades
because it's a lot.
And we work with some of the biggest and best organisations on the planet. We've both been leaders of teams for many years, and we were also both team coaches. So what does that mean? It means that we're partnering with leaders and their teams to help them to get to high performance. So we think about this stuff a lot.
Every day.
We've recently written a book called Leading Edge, which is all about what we're going to be talking about on this podcast, about strategies for developing and sustaining high-performing teams. And it's available for pre-order via Amazon and all good online bookstores. It's out in September. Please go and check it out.
So, Jenny, today we're here to talk about what is high performance and why bother. So, what is it?
I think it's a really important question to answer, actually, because I think it's a term that's thrown around a lot.
Mm.
I think people talk about we're a high-performing team, or I want a high-performing team, or they're a high-performing team, without really thinking about, well, what does that mean? What makes them a high-performing team? So I think it's really important for us to explore that today and have a think about, well, what is, when you've got a team, what makes a team high-performing? And in our team coaching practice, it's one of the first questions that often gets asked by a team. You know, this thing that you're talking about, this high performance thing, what is it? And the first question I will always say is, well, what do you think it is? And they'll say, well, they'll say something in relation to results at that point, because that's the first thing that we think about when we think of a high performing team. We think about the results that they're delivering, don't we?
Yeah.
And you know, that's things like, are they achieving their KPIs? Are they achieving their objectives, their goals? Whatever you want to call it, that thing that we call the team's results, are they achieving that and achieving that consistently? But is that enough?
But also, isn't there, you know, my experience, a lot of people think they're high performance, but actually when you really ask them what high performance is, they find it very difficult to articulate.
Yeah.
And it might just be the same as they did last year. And I think there's something there about us not really being sure or having any clarity about what is expected, what could high performance be.
Yeah. And then we get to the conversation about, well, whose results?
Yeah.
You know, is it the bunch of individuals in the team? Are they all consistently achieving their KPIs? Is that team performance, or is that just a bunch of individuals who are all doing a really big job?
Yeah.
So there's something here about really being clear about, okay, well, what are the team's results? What is it that this team is accountable for delivering together, that if they achieve that, then they're delivering their results, right? So that's one aspect of this.
Yeah.
And when I say to teams, is that enough? And they always go, well, no, because if we're achieving our results, but it feels terrible to be part of this team, you know, what we call the dynamics in the team are not great. You know, people are not wanting to come to work on a Monday morning. They're not looking forward to collaborating with their colleagues. That team meeting that they have, you know, on a Monday morning is painful. You know, and so it feels awful to be part of this team, then that's not okay, is it?
No.
Even if you're achieving the results.
And maybe that's what it is also about sustaining high performance, because you could get to high performance and have amazing results, but you're not going to sustain it unless you've got those dynamics, those edge dynamics that we talk about, which makes you feel really good and want to continue to be part of it and evolve.
So there's something in it about the dynamics needing to be really good in this team. So it needs to feel good to be part of this team, which we know intuitively, and research shows that if the dynamics are good in the team, then the results will follow. But it's not enough for the dynamics to be good on their own, is it, either?
Yeah.
So whilst it's not good enough for the results to be good and the dynamics to be poor, it's also, the inverse is also not okay.
Yes.
So it's not okay for it to feel great, me to love my colleagues, love coming into work on a Monday morning, but we're not delivering the results. But if nothing else, that's really demotivating, but also the organisation won't tolerate it for very long. You know, the questions will be asked about why the team's not delivering those results. So I believe, therefore, that you need both.
And I think for the team as well, because a team wants to know that their results are amazing as well. So when you're a high performing team and you have that sort of sense of team spirit and all the great things, if you're not delivering the results, I think over time that would erode that spirit, that somehow
it's not sustainable,
it's not working, you know, somebody's not pulling their weight or whatever it might be. And so I think that would dilute it over time, which is why you do need the two to operate together. And there's something there about a high performing team consistently challenge each other to up their game, don't they? To come up with, you know, ever higher levels of performance, and their aspirations kind of blow them out the water. And you can see it from outside.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we can all spot those high performing teams. They're obviously very rare, because we do notice them and we go, wow, look at what they did. So it's very visible. And I think that the edge dynamics are also very visible. You can see that cohesion, if you want to call it that, or that sense of we're one, we're all doing this together, we're growing and performing at amazing levels, and we feel really powerful, and what we do is amazing.
And we're delivering results.
Yeah.
It's both of those things. It's the dynamics in the team, how it feels to be a part of this team, and it's the results that we can deliver together. It's not just us on our own individually, because
no,
a team, right? You're just a bunch of people who happen to work for the same boss. That's not a team. Yeah, here we're talking about both of those things. And I would argue pretty equally.
Yeah.
You know, the results are equally as important as the dynamics in the team.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
And of course, we would say you can't just get there by accident.
Yeah.
You actually have to get there by design. You have to plan for this. You have to put effort in to create that real team spirit and team activity.
Let's talk about the how that happens. You know, how do you get to that point of high performance if it's about both of those things, if it's about the results and the dynamics?
So it's not by chance.
Yeah.
No, it's not by chance. I mean, sometimes there is a bit of luck, but I'd say then it's not sustainable, as we talked about. You know, something in then will come in and erode it. So it has to be by design, and you have to think about it. It's also not just a one-off event, because teams evolve, and we talk about them being dynamic, so things change. So you can't just do a one-off event and say, hey, we've done that, we're a high-performing team. It actually has to be planned, paired, and carried out on a sort of rhythm that you can agree with your team to make sure that they're really connecting.
Well, you see this in sports teams, don't we, where a sport, a elite, top of their game sports team doesn't happen by chance. They put huge amounts of effort into it. They're reviewing their performance all the time. They're watching themselves playing back. They're thinking about the dynamics in their team. They get that this high performance piece is by design.
They work out strategies. They work out their plays. They can start to communicate almost by body language without talking when they're in the middle of the game. Because we all know that once you're in the middle of the detail and the pressure's on, it's very hard to then have a discussion about what's the best way to go forward with this. But high performing teams in the workplace, as much as on the sports field, will have worked through those things, and they'll also notice what's going on with each other. And that's been a challenge for the hybrid world, but it's still possible if you communicate and you discuss and you work through this, then you know when someone needs you to step in, or you need to work on something together, or that things are moving a bit faster and a bit different, and how you're going to react and work together.
Which all suggests that there's something about not just kind of by design once. It's a continuous process. High performance is not something that you've probably ever really are done with.
No.
This is something that you need to keep on going, keep on looking at every single day. It's part of your rhythms and your ways of working every day, is this high performance mindset as a team.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the real roles of the leader, is to set that rhythm and that mindset that we're a team. I'm the leader in here. I'm a member of this team with a special role, albeit, but you know, one of their roles is to set the rhythm of, let's review where we are, how are we doing, how can we adjust, how are we ready for the next week, the next month, does everybody know who's doing what, and if something comes up, how are we going to respond to that, and getting the team to really work it out themselves. So not doing it all for the team either. This is the team's responsibility. Once they're on the pitch, the team have to get on with it themselves. You know, the coach and everybody else, the manager, are off the pitch. So this stuff needs to be done by design. It needs to be thought through so that then they can respond in the moment, and then they adjust at the break moments, you know, in the intervals or whatever you want to call it.
So let's bring this to life a little bit more. What does it actually look like when you've got a high performing team? What does it actually look like in that team? If we're sitting in and a bit of a fly on the wall in their team meetings, what would we see them doing?
Well, I think you see the impressive results. So you'd be like, wow, they've delivered that. Ooh, I would never have expected that group of people to deliver that. So there's something about the synergy that they have done much more than you could have assumed that group of individuals could have done. But there's also that single unit thing. And if you're watching how they work together, there's a sort of single interface outside. So people can cover for each other, they can speak for each other. But then inside the team, they'll also challenge. They'll work on each other's work, but they'll challenge and debate and discuss things to make it the best for the team. And people won't take it personally. They'll see it as a way to continuously improve and to do things better.
And I've noticed to that end that it's not always obvious in a high-performing team who the leader is. If you're looking at the outside in,
so true.
It's not necessarily the person who's chairing the meeting, because they probably rove that role a bit.
Yeah,
they're not the person who speaks the most. In fact, people are, the airtime's pretty equal.
It's probably everybody in the team, apart from the leader talking.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the leader's probably holding back a little bit, but, you know, jumping in as needed to kind of guide the conversation to where it needs to go. So it's not always obvious, is it, who the leader is? And I love that in a high performing team, because what it says to me is that everybody's taking on the leadership role.
Yes.
Even though they don't have the leadership authority in the hierarchy, they still play that role of leader in the team and their interactions with each other.
Yeah. I love that too. That sense of accountability is shared, and we're all accountable for the team results and for the team belonging and the team dynamics.
Yeah. And to that end, what I also notice is that how they show up, not inside the team, but when they're in other forums, when maybe they're the only person from their team in another meeting, how they represent the team. You know, they're not kind of going, oh, I don't know anything about that, it's not my area, you'll have to go and speak to another member of the team. They're confident enough in that position to be able to represent the whole team in that meeting. Yeah. It's really lovely because it saves a whole heap of time. It feels like they're that single unit again that you talked about earlier. You know, that's that accountability coming through. You know, I can represent my team as if they're all there with me. It's amazing how that can happen.
And I think it's really an unusual thing. I think we've met loads of really good teams.
Yeah.
And I think it's really rare the number of high performing teams that we meet who've never, you know, done any work on themselves. You know, to that part of it's by design. And I think because of that, you often see people working in silos within teams. This is my area of expertise, and I don't dare challenge or criticize the other person's area of expertise. And I would never dream of speaking for them outside. So I think it is one of the hallmarks of a high performing team that people do that and are confident and comfortable to do it on behalf of the other team members.
And ultimately, what I see that as representing is a real shift in mindset. When we first start working with a team that wants to get to high performance, what's the difference between that team at the beginning and the team at the end? And I talk about it as being the difference between from me as an individual in the team to we as a team together. And that being when they start, the focus is all about me, my work, what I've got to get done. This team stuff is nice, and it's extra. It's extracurricular. It's probably social. You know, I like the idea of collaborating, but I don't have time for that. I already work really hard for this organization. How much more do I need to put in order to make this team stuff happen that you're talking about? And I don't quite see the benefit because I'm performing. I'm getting rewarded for my individual effort.
Yeah.
And by the end of the process, where they've got to is we're a team. I'm seeing the benefits of that with my individual work, but my primary focus is here with us, because I'm getting a benefit in my own work as well as, you know, supporting contribution of the team's objectives. You know, I'm getting something back personally. My work is better because I feel supported. My resilience is lifted. You know, I'm feeling a huge sense of belonging, part of this team, energy, motivation. We're working together with something. I'm not on my own anymore. Like, and it's not taking me more time to be a part of this team.
Yeah.
It's actually taking me less time to do stuff because I'm doing it with other people.
Yeah.
And so collaboration doesn't mean more meetings. It means better interactions.
And that's often what people think, isn't it? Is high performance means more work, more effort. You know, I'm already working really hard. How can I do even more? I'm here all the time and I'm on my emails at night back at home. How can I do more? You know, and that's not what we mean by high performance at all. It's not more effort.
Yeah, this is not working longer hours. I mean, that's not performance. It's certainly not sustainable, is it?
No.
Working longer hours might be a short-term fix for a problem that's right in front of your face. It's not a long-term working style that's going to sustain what we consider to be high performance.
Yeah. And working as a team is often the best way to identify what's the most important stuff that the team needs to do, so you can get rid of lower value added things. And to your point about collaboration, you know, you can share the load and come up with some much more creative ways of doing things. So it's not about more work, it's actually about working smarter too. Mm.
The other thing that I notice is that leaders often think that, well, the key to a high performing team is just hiring really, really high caliber people. People who are, by definition, high performers in their own right.
Yeah.
If I fill my team with individuals like that, I'm automatically going to have a high performing team. I think it's the biggest mistake. So I think it's absolutely spot on that people should have high caliber people in their team. But high caliber people on its own, without that design element of the effort you put into the team itself as a whole, doesn't automatically mean a high performing team.
Wasn't there that story of the dream team, Jenny? That basketball team?
Yeah. It was the 1992 Olympics. I love this story. It's one of my favourites. I think it illustrates this point so beautifully, where the US Olympic basketball team, and they wanted to, they were like, we're determined to win this. So they put together what they called the dream team. So it was people like Michael Jordan and some other amazing, like the top people at the top of this sport, professional athletes. And they put them all together in a dream team. And they were like, we're going to win this. Like, this has got, yeah, there's no other team in the world that could compete with this bunch of high performing individuals. And they've, but they had the presence of mind to test them out beforehand. So they thought, we'll test them by putting them in front of some college basketball. And college basketball players are also amazing. Like, this is not just a bunch of school kids.
Well, they're all future NBA.
They're going to be pretty awesome as well. But these guys had kind of worked together as a team up until this point, and the dream team lost the first game that they had against these guys.
How amazing for that college team.
Yeah.
But wow.
A bit of a wake-up call. Yeah. When you realise that actually what they hadn't done at that point was work on the dynamics of the team. You know, they weren't looking at how they worked together. They were all amazing individual basketball players, but they weren't a team yet. And so what did they go away and work on? Their teamwork, right? And then they did amazingly. So, you know, that I think that's a lovely story that just illustrates how a team of champions doesn't make a champion team.
Yeah. And we've seen it in business. I mean, you know, a team I was working with recently, they all amazing people with fantastic experience, all knowledgeable in their field, amazing performers, and they all had their own agendas. And it was a bit sharp elbows. You know, they were all trying to achieve their stuff because they needed to get it done. It was going to be the best thing for the organization. But actually, when you looked at all the team members doing that, it was ridiculous what they were imposing on the organization. And they also were all struggling from exhaustion, overwork, and trying to almost compete against each other. And they needed to come together and say, what are we about? And how can we actually work together so that it's best for the organization, but also best for us? We could actually all be more innovative, more interesting, and develop our own skill sets and do better things if we did it together.
Yeah, I think the benefits of high-performing teams are just so huge to individuals as well as to the team and the organisation. And I think once people get over that objection of, and they realise it's just not true, about the effort that they're going to need to put into this team, actually it's about working smarter, not harder. So that's when they really start to realise, actually teams are a multiplier for us.
Yeah.
You know, what can we achieve on our own? So much we can get to good on our own as individuals in this group of people, but if we operate as a team, how much more can we actually achieve?
Yeah,
I think in every team that I work with, there's always this sense of untapped potential.
Yeah,
no matter how good they are to start with, they always feel like it's just something we're not tapping into yet. And that I guarantee you, it's the team bit that they're not tapping into.
And even once they've got to high performance and sustaining it, they still know that there's more. Because it just suddenly opens up even more opportunities for them. I think it's that idea of like, oh, who would have known that there was that possibility? We didn't even know we could reach where we got to. And now there's this that's available to us. So I think that untapped potential, and it also unlocks the untapped potential in the individuals too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And nobody ever wants to leave, do they? That's the thing with high-performing teams. They're all really enjoying.
I think they feel sad when they do. Sometimes it's the right thing to do because they need the next, you know, career development opportunity. They know that, but it's hard. It becomes hard to make that decision to leave the team because a high-performing team feels good. And it's rare. And it doesn't happen everywhere. And you don't want to lose that.
No.
So as we've talked a bit about what high performance is and the definition of it, and explored that in a bit of detail, let's now have a look at the benefits of high performance. Like, why should we bother with it? It sounds like a lot of work, to be honest with you. You know, this whole, you know, by design piece, and it doesn't happen by accident. You know, you have to put effort into it. I want to check in on, is it worth it for leaders? Yeah. So what are the benefits that you would see?
Well, there's loads of research out there. So the benefits are really worth it when you look at what high performing teams really do achieve. And there's three things. They're increased innovation, improved complex problem solving, and finally, better decision making.
Lovely. So three things. So if you've got a high-performing team, you're going to get those three things happening. So tell us a bit more about the innovation one.
Yeah, so the innovation one is really interesting. So what we know is that great ideas, you know, sometimes an individual can come up with a great idea, but actually a team will come up with even better, more innovative ideas. And it definitely takes a team to make that idea become a reality. Execution of great ideas needs a team. So teams take the idea, they make it even better, and they find ways to take it into fruition.
So how does that happen in a team then? How does a team make an idea better? Surely one person could come up with an idea by themselves.
Well, they can do, and often people will, but that's why so many ideas never happen, because it might need refining. So having lots of different perspectives, that diversity of thought, can take an initial idea and everybody builds on it, will refine it, add to it, and it will turn into something else as a result of the group all working on it. And that's what makes it something that's much more valuable from an innovative perspective. The team will then work together and use all their different skills to turn it into reality. They'll build a plan, they'll work out, you know, the different ways and who needs to be involved in the different stages of the execution of that plan. It's also about experimenting and the team supporting each other in the experimentation process. Taking risks on your own is hard, but if you're part of a team, it feels like you're supported. So the team will learn from mistakes, they'll support each other to build, have another go, learn from the next lot of failure, and keep embracing that mindset of possibility and encouraging each other to stretch and grow. And that's where the high performing team can provide much higher levels of innovation than an individual alone. They'll actually deliver it.
Yeah, interesting. And what about that complex problem solving then? Why is that so beneficial in teams?
Well, what we know is the world is getting much more complex, and all the problems we're having to solve are becoming increasingly complex as a result. So one person can solve a simple problem or a problem that's in their area of discipline or knowledge quite easily. But more problems nowadays are multidisciplinary and therefore require different brains to help solve them. We need a team to solve those complex problems increasingly.
And they're also often first-time problems, is what I'm noticing. They're problems that nobody's come across before because we've never been in this situation before. And so needing to come up with different ideas than you've thought about before because the problem's different from anything that you've had before, I think is a really important part of this, isn't it? And that's what makes the problems complex now.
Yeah, because we have no idea what it is and how to approach it. So you need that diversity of thought, and you need everybody to bounce off, challenge our thinking, and come up with possibly multiple solutions that could all maybe provide a scenario way to look at it. And then move on with it. So again, complex problem solving needs a team.
You talked about diversity of thought. I'd like to dig into that a little bit more. What do you mean by diversity of thought?
Lots of different perspectives, experiences, but also a different way of approaching your thinking. So, you know, we all have our own way of looking at the world and our own lens based on our own experience and knowledge. But other people approach things very differently. And sometimes it can feel like they're wrong, or it's really difficult to understand them. And that's the ones that you really want on your team, because they give you such a different viewpoint that that can achieve those aha moments. And when we're really wanting people to, you know, develop their agile thinking so that they can solve those problems that nobody's ever had before, we need to be taking it from very diverse kind of perspectives, opening our mind up to very new possibilities and options.
And that makes me think that, you know, leaders that will often hire people they think will fit into the team, right? I often hear that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking for the right fit. And actually, that's about looking for sameness, isn't it, rather than difference?
It is.
For people who think in the same way that you do. And actually, if you want that diversity of thought and the ability then to solve problems, you probably need to look for difference more than you need to look for
sameness. Exactly. And it's okay to have some sameness, but I think you need to challenge yourself on what the sameness is and where your discomfort is with the differences. And actually challenge that to say, why could we benefit from this in a better way? And how can we do more of it?
And I presume also, how do we create the conditions for that difference to thrive still in this team? And actually use that skill that we've got of that diversity of thought in the right way in the team.
And we found fantastic situations where we've been working with teams where they've enjoyed getting into that place and starting to think, oh, yes, how do we include everybody much more effectively and maybe bring people in who were a bit quieter or people disengaged from them because they had a very different approach or mindset, and started to say, actually, we really want to hear from you, and how can we do that? And that builds into decision making.
That's the third one, isn't it? The third benefit.
Third benefit is, as a result of, you know, the better innovation and the improved quality of solving problems, you get to make better decisions. You get the right decisions made at the right time better. And I think, you know, we also see that from a leader's perspective, they can often be bottlenecks. So rather than empowering the team to make the decisions, they're all passing them up to the leader, who can only do so much in a day. And so they sit there for ages, all these decisions frustrating everybody. But actually what you then can do with a high performing team is they're then capable of making the decisions themselves.
Yeah, and that's about knowing which decisions should be made at what level in the team, right? And which are the right ones that the leader should be involved in, and what are the conditions for that to happen, and what's the process for that happening as well. Having the right decision-making processes, the right types of decisions, becomes a really crucial part of this. You know, high performance in a team is how they make decisions, isn't it? And huge, massive benefit to the organisation. And the leader and the team members, if those decisions are made in the right way, the right time, at the right level.
That's right. Yeah.
Lovely. So there's lots, it sounds like there's lots and lots of organizational benefits.
Yeah.
Of, I mean, these three things that you talk about here are massive organizational benefits. So if we dig a little bit more into what an organization gets from high performing teams, what else is there?
So the organization gets reduced turnover. People enjoy being part of a high performing team. You know, many people say, oh, I'm leaving because I've got a poor manager is the common thread. Well, guess what? If you're a leader of a high performing team, generally they're not complaining about the manager. So you get lower turnover. People are highly engaged in a high performing team. They enjoy the work that they're doing. They enjoy the people that they're working with. They don't want to leave. And also they're more productive. So they're doing more with their resources because the team are looking at them going, how can we do this better? So, you know, we've talked already about how this isn't about more effort needed. This is actually about the team looking at what they do, prioritizing, streamlining things. So actually they do more with less.
Yeah, lovely. What about the benefits to team members, the individual people who make up a team? What are the benefits to them?
I've never met anybody who doesn't want to be part of a high performing team or who hasn't loved being part of a high performing team. And they feel really supportive, first of all. You know, there's that lovely question of, have you got a best friend at work? Well, everybody has best friends at work in a high performing team. You're supported. The well-being of you and your colleagues is important to the other members of the team. You're also achieving more than you ever did on your own. And you can feel really proud of what the team is achieving, but also what you yourself are achieving. You start to see that you're growing in your own capacity and capability is much more than you could ever have thought of prior to being part of a high-performing team. And I think you take more risks and are also more confident in taking those risks. And so that becomes a virtuous circle. You just continue to grow and develop and never want to leave. So, yeah, you do leave. But what I found with one high performing team I was talking to is that the people left and moved on to greater things, but they didn't want to lose connections with their previous colleagues.
Yeah, and that's when you get kind of still people meeting up for, you know, dinner and drinks still many years after.
Yeah, and
they felt that real sense of belonging and connection with their colleagues, don't they?
Yeah, and they have alumni WhatsApp groups and things.
I've been reflecting on what the benefits are to leaders of all of this, because actually, yeah, that's who we're talking here today, isn't it? It's predominantly to leaders. And you know, I think there's something there. We talked about decision making earlier. You know, if your team are making the decisions and you don't need to be involved in a lot of that decision making, maybe you're just kept informed of what the decisions are that are made. You know, it feels so good, doesn't it? It feels like there's a shared accountability within this team for the outcomes that you're trying to achieve. I think you're also, as a leader, then freed up to focus on the stuff that really matters. You're not caught up in the minutiae, the detail of the everyday decision making about whether we should do red or blue, right or left. You know, you're a bit able to look at, okay, so where are we heading as a team? What's coming down the line? What's on the horizon that we need to be aware of, that we need to do something right now? Or, you know, what should our strategy be? It's the strategic stuff that you're freeing yourself up to focus on and pay attention to. And that's where the real value added comes. That's where your development really is as well. That's where your next career move will be. You're able to attract talent as well. You know, people want to be part of, just as people don't want to leave a high performing team, people hear about and they see, they know, they can spot high performance a mile away and they want to be part of teams like that. They get a reputation around the organization. So there's something there about being able to attract people to your team without even really trying.
Yeah.
But also obviously keeping people, you know, we talked about that a bit. And I think probably most importantly out of all of this, if, you know, when I think about the benefits to me as an individual leader of a high performing team, because I truly believe we've got one ourselves in Management Dynamics,
I
can take a break. Mm. I can go off on holiday and know that the team will operate exactly as I would hope they would in my absence. You know, there's no phone calls, you know, disturbing or emails. I can turn off and I can shut off and I can have a good break without worrying that it's all falling apart and that I need to keep an eye on things from a distance. I can trust that it will just happen. And if they really need me, that, you know, I know that if they get in touch with me, it's an absolute exception. It hasn't happened yet. So, you know, it's, I think that's probably the ability to really rest and recharge is so crucial, isn't it?
Yes. I agree with you completely. So there'll be leaders out there going, well, how do I do that? What's the conditions for success?
Yeah, well, this is where our edge dynamics come in. You mentioned them earlier briefly. And these are the things that research tells us are the conditions for success in a high-performing team. And if you get these things right, you're much more likely to get that high-performance thing happening. So the edge dynamics are reason, results, routines, relationships, and resilience. Should I briefly describe each of them? So we've got reason. So this is your team's reason. Why does it exist? So really important word there, why?
Yeah. Why?
What's our purpose as a team? You know, why are we here? Why are we here in this format? The organization had probably a number of choices that they could have made, but they've set us up in this way with this remit. Why? For what purpose? You get really clear on that, it's like your team's North Star. This is the thing that will hold people together, even when it gets really tough, even when it's really challenging. If they're really clear on their why, it's there's something there, it's like the glue that holds you together, even when times are tough. And being really clear about that purpose and that reason is just so powerful. And then helping people to connect that to their own individual purpose, because we all have a purpose, whether we know it or not. Someone's not really aware of what that purpose might be, but understanding what that is and then seeing the connection to the team is a really powerful thing. That's motivation in action.
Yeah.
Right? It's really intrinsic motivation. So that's reason. Maybe you should talk about results. Tell us about results.
Well, results is sometimes confused with reason. So yeah. Many teams, when we start working with them, think that they've got their reason, but actually it's their results.
Yeah.
So that's often their objectives, their KRAs, whatever they call them, their goals. And it's ensuring that the team and every team member has absolute clarity about what those objectives are. Now, often teams have lots of them, far too many. So it's also about having that laser-like focus. What's really critical for us as a team and what will help add that value that we want to be doing as a high-performing team, and identifying what the measures of success are so that the team is really clear, every single person, on who does what and how they're going to operate. So we would suggest that they use what we call the big what's and have maybe four or five of those. Buckets of key things that they do, create a great name for it and make it memorable and very motivational for everybody. But then that adds within that reason that you've just talked about to keep everybody on track. They know where they are, they know who's working on what, and you can then use it to identify where to collaborate.
So if you were to sum up the difference between the reason and the results, it sounds like reason is your why.
And results is your what.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
Yeah, at the team level. This is not the individual. Your individual objectives really link into this, of course.
Your individual objectives do need to then be aligned into it. But we would say at the team level, you start off with saying, what are we meant to do as a team? And the leaders' stuff is included within that. And then from there, each individual can then say, and this is what I do.
And that's where, to that too,
yeah, people. And that's where they can see their line of sight about how I contribute to the overall team reason. And if there's some stuff that people are doing that doesn't fit in there, then you can have a conversation about, is that the right stuff we should be doing? And if so, where does it fit? And if not, then the manager, the leader can work with the individual to allocate it elsewhere or get it removed entirely.
Lovely. And then we've got routines. So this is the team's ways of working. So this is how do they meet with each other? How do they communicate? How do they make decisions? How do they track their processes? How do they, what tools do they use to just do their work? I mean, so many more things than that, right? But
yeah.
You get the idea. So all of this is the routines in the team. And some, you know, teams often inherit routines that they've just used for years. They've never really put much thought into whether they work or not, or how effective they are, or what they're driving in the team. And this is where the design piece, you know, is a really good example of why design is really important, because poor routines can really undermine a team's success, can undermine the relationships in the team, can undermine the ability of the teams to achieve their results, and so on. Whereas really clearly and well-defined routines can have the opposite effect and create such a step change in that team. And this is where the quick wins sit often. It's very easy to add an agenda to a meeting, for example, or a quick decision-making summary at the end of a meeting that's got an agenda or whatever it might be. And these are things you can experiment with and try and see if they work, and if they don't, change them. So lots of wins to be had in the routine space, and really crucial for a team's success. Tell us about relationships, Ellie.
So relationships are probably the one area that most people think of when they think of teams. And it's also the most complex. And maybe that's why we all think about relationships when we think about teams. There's so much. Humans are really complex beings as an individual. So you add 8 of them together and the complexity is enormous. So people are complex beings, so teams are even more complex. But relationships are critical for a high-performing team. We need to have, and we hear people talking about psychological safety for a high-performing team. But how do you get to that? And first of all, we would say there's some foundational skills that teams need to learn about working together and getting to know each other before they can move on to what we would call more advanced skills in relationships, which is where you'd then be able to start to challenge each other openly and move to that vulnerability-based trust where you would have psychological safety. So you need to get time for the team to understand each other, where they're all coming from, how they can trust each other on a day-to-day basis, depend on each other, and then they start to gel and become the glue that would be looking out for each other, make sure that they're getting the job done, but doing it well and growing each other too.
Yeah, there's so much in relationships, isn't there? It's one of the biggest dynamics.
Yeah, and people are frightened of it. Yeah. You know, conflict, for example. You know, many people shy away from conflict, but actually, you know, when you talk about it in a positive way, it's good to share diverse opinions or viewpoints or ideas, and to try and really understand where somebody else is coming from, so that you can both move forward with it. And that's a hard thing to do. And it also takes time. I think trying to rush relationships in a one-day workshop is really, you know, it can help a bit, but it's assuming too much. Mm-hmm. I think it takes time for us to really build strong bonds with each other.
And this is the basis of what we were talking about earlier in terms of diversity of thought, isn't it? You know, the foundation of relationships enables that diversity of thought.
It's
all very well putting together a team of people who all think differently, but if they don't get on and they haven't got ways of overcoming that destructive conflict that we can see happening when people just disagree with each other and turn it into something more positive, then, you know, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, if they just think people are weird and different, then they're not going to listen to each other. Yeah. And then you're in a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
So giving people tools to start hearing and understanding and to spend time getting and also looking for similarities, because that sometimes, you know, there are always some of those can just tone down, and then people are more open to the differences.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. What about the last one?
Well, the last one is resilience. It's so often overlooked in teams. When we think about resilience, we often think about individual resilience. Mm-hmm. We think about Jenny's ability to bounce back from a challenge or a setback. And her on her own. It's not, you know, it's not us together. But actually teams are have a massive opportunity in terms of improving individual resilience. This is another benefit for you, for individuals in the team. You've got that multiplier effect again. So that sense of belonging, that sense of support, of the engagement that it can give us, all will lift an individual's resilience. But we also think about team resilience as being more than just that. It's not just the sum of the individual levels of resilience of each team member. It's also about the team's ability to look forward, to do that horizon scanning together. It's not just a responsibility of the leader. It's something the team can also be responsible for. You know, in 12 months' time, this is going to happen. It's going to severely disrupt the way that we work. What do we need to do now in order to be ready for that as a team together?
Yeah.
It's also about teams are dynamic. So teams are always changing. They're always losing people to go off to pastures new, or they're bringing on board new people. And that dynamism creates change in the team. Every time you have new team members or you lose a team member, the team is new again in some way, shape or form. So it's important to have processes and ways in which you bring those people on board in such a way that it enables that maintenance of high performance.
Yeah.
So there's onboarding and you know, offboarding people, really important in teams, beginnings and endings. And then the last piece is around continuous improvement and learning and kind of best practice and getting better. It's that sharpening the saw piece. So how do you know, a high performing team is never content with the status quo. They're always looking for ways to improve how they do things. They're always a bit restless. That sense of untapped potential we talked about earlier, you just really start to see that happening all the time. So they're always looking for new and better ways of doing things, or just making small tweaks that make a really big difference to a team. And that's part of resilience too. So that's about creating resilience in the team processes so that they are fit for purpose.
Yeah. And just keep re-energizing and reboosting the team in all areas.
Absolutely.
So we'll talk much more about those and many other things on teams in future podcasts. So today, I hope everybody's enjoyed listening to us covering what is high performance and really looking at why we care about high performance so much. What are the benefits that it brings? And then
lots. The
and then the conditions for success. So it's been a real pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you all again soon.
Hence, see you soon.